Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Kevin Remney welcomes Brad Anderson, Corporate Vice President for Windows Server and System Center, to the show as they discuss the latest features and enhancements made in Windows Server and System Center 2012 R2, SQL Server 2014, Visual Studio 2013, Windows Intune, as well as several new Windows Azure services. Tune in for part one of their series as they discuss the first of the three engineering pillars that guided the development of each of these products. Kevin, the mic is yours.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first of a special three-part series of discussions entitled What's New in 2012 R2, where we discuss the exciting new wave of products from Microsoft, a release that features Windows Server, System Center 2012 R2, Windows 8.1, SQL Server 2014, Visual Studio 2013, and big updates for Windows Azure. Joining me today to discuss the first of these three engineering pillars that have guided the development of these products is the Corporate Vice President of the Windows Server and System Center business, Brad Anderson. My name is Kevin Remdy, and I'm a Senior Technology Evangelist on the U.S. Developer and Platform Evangelism team at Microsoft, and I'm your TechNet Radio host today. Now, before we get to you, Brad, allow me to give our viewers a quick summary of your history with Microsoft. For those of you that might not be aware, Brad came to Microsoft 10 years ago to lead the SMS team, and he's now responsible for program management and engineering of all the Windows Server and System Center products. But welcome, Brad.
Hey, thanks. Good to be here.
All right. So tell us a little bit more about what a corporate VP of program management does at Microsoft.
Yeah, you know, here's the way that I think about it. The program management role is really the role that is responsible for defining the strategy and then, you know, defining actually what it is that we go and build. So think in terms of the program managers are the roles and the individuals who are collecting input, whether that be, you know, the key trends in the industry, competitive tactics and competitive impacts, you know, things that are happening across the company in terms of company-wide initiatives that we're going to do. But all of the inputs, all the feedback, all the telemetry comes into the program managers. The program managers synthesize that, you know, define the strategy that we're going to go after if we tackle, you know, an opportunity or a challenge, you know, whatever the case may be, is prioritize all the inputs, prioritize the opportunities, and then work with the rest of the development team to then actually go and deliver that value. So in terms of how I think about it, it really is what we build as an engineering team is defined by program managers. And then just give a little more background, you've got the developers actually go build it, and then you've got the developers in tests, and the test organization is really responsible for verifying what has been built meets the criteria and the specs that were defined by the program manager. And so, you know, dev, test, and program management all work together to basically build the products that we ship.
Excellent. So over the past several weeks, stretching back to TechEd North America, really, Microsoft has made an exciting series of announcements about this next wave of products, those products that I mentioned up at the top of the recording here, including Windows Server 2012 R2, System Center 2012 R2, and so on. We'll get to some of those specific areas of improvement a little bit later, but gosh, what's amazing to me is some of these products just had major releases only within the past year. So how is it that Microsoft's able to come out with these new feature-rich improvements and feature-rich versions so quickly?
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, it's just awesome. Just awesome how much innovation you've done in such a short period of time. You know, and you're right, you know, we made some significant changes in how we've operated the teams and actually how we are building the products. And I think it's remarkable to see what we were able to accomplish in less than a year. So I'm just give you a couple of details. The first thing is we have an engineering principle that we call Cloud First. And Cloud First has a couple of big components to it that deliver value faster and deliver that value at a quality rate and a stability and a reliability rate that is far higher than what we've ever been able to do before. So what we mean when we say Cloud First is, you know, Microsoft is unique in that we are the only organization in the world that is operating, you know, 200-plus cloud services running at an incredible scale on a public cloud. We take the learning from those services in that public cloud that we operate, and then we drive that into our products we deliver to the customers around the world to run in their data centers. You know, so in terms of organizations that are building and operating public clouds, private clouds, and clouds that service providers can stand up, or hosted clouds, Microsoft is unique in that we are the only organization that is enabling, building, and operating all three of those and doing it in a consistent manner. So here's where this gets really interesting, I think, for the people who are listening to this. What we're able to do is we're able to basically go and build capabilities into our services, into Azure, prove them, battle harden them, get them, you know, to run and operate at that cloud scale, and then we deliver that through Windows Server and System Center for our customers to run in their own data centers. That literally is enabling us to deliver out value faster because, you know, we will take a little time and we'll get it running up in our services and on Windows Azure, and then we can quickly get it into our on-premises product because we've already proven it, we've already battle-hardened, and it's ready to go. So that's the first thing. The second thing is we also made some fundamental changes in how we did our planning and then our actual execution in the engineering team. And this may sound like, you know, are you serious? This is the first time, you know, you've done this, but this was the first time where we did all of our planning and then had common milestones, common entry and exit criteria across Windows, Windows Server, System Center, Intune, Azure. You know, going back after we released the 2012 products at the end of the summer of 2012, you know, we pulled all the teams together. We had a common planning effort. And then I published a vision document, and that vision document was common for everything we were doing across Windows Server, across System Center, across Windows Intune. And because we did all that planning together, we defined end-to-end scenarios across all of those different products and services. The engineering teams, they did the planning across all of those teams, so we knew exactly what the dependencies were, what the end-to-end scenarios we were going to deliver. We had done all of that work, so we actually, when we started coding, which, you know, we started on November 11th, when we started that coding, we knew what had to be done, who was going to do it, when it was coming, and we were able to rapidly deliver those end-to-end scenarios. And those two changes are what has enabled us to deliver such amazing value in such a short period of time.
Wow, fantastic. I mean, I think any IT professional who's been following and using Microsoft's products for any amount of time really appreciates the fact that even with this most recent preview release that you've made, everything came out all at once. And it was just a perfect opportunity to try it all, from end to end, all the scenarios that you're building, that you're testing, that you're now encouraging people to try. And we can assume that that's going to be the similar cadence that happens down the road toward the release.
Yeah, and that is absolutely a first, as you mentioned. It's the first time that we've released, you know, Windows Server and System Center and Client on the same dates, integrated end-to-end scenarios, and that will be the standard as we go forward.
Okay, so with this cloud-first strategy in mind, you're approaching all the products you're responsible for, as well as the ones that your products interoperate with three main engineering pillars as a guide, and it's these three pillars that we'll be hearing a lot about from you and from your team over the coming weeks. Can you give us a brief overview of what those pillars are and what the scenarios are that they represent?
Well, as we started the definition and really were defining what we were going to deliver in these R2 releases, a lot of the work that we had done prior to that was around defining what we think the most important and key trends in the industry are that are just going to define the future, not only of Microsoft and software, but the future of business as a whole. And those four trends were the consumerization of IT, the explosion of data, the move to the cloud, and then the new modern way in which applications are being built and some of the trends around DevOps. And we think that those are the four key trends that we want to make sure that we enable organizations to embrace and take advantage of as they differentiate their business and, quite honestly, as the IT professionals around the world differentiate themselves and advance their own careers. So with those key trends in mind, the pillars that we set out to really address in these R2 releases were: we wanted to empower what we call people-centric IT, and that really is about enabling users to work on any device, anywhere in the world, and do it in a way that is secure and enables IT to ensure that the corporate assets are secure and protected. We wanted to help organizations transform the data center and transform their data centers and move into a cloud type of offering, and not just a cloud offering in their data centers or a private cloud, but every customer that we talk to believes and feels that over time they'll be consuming multiple clouds. And so how do we help organizations transform their data center and embrace these hybrid cloud environments? And then third was all around enabling modern applications, modern business applications. And so the work that we do as we work hard to deliver a consistent set of capabilities across our private host and a public cloud gives the capability for organizations to build an application once and then place and run and execute that application in the cloud that makes the most sense to them. So those were the three big pillars we focused in on these R2 releases. And then obviously our you know, our partner teams here in SQL and Azure have done a great deal of focus on, in how they have addressed the explosion of big data. And the way we talk about that one is we talk about unlocking insights from any data. So those are the pillars.
Excellent. Okay, so now that we've introduced our viewers to the principles behind these three pillars, let's focus on the first of those three topics, empowering people-centric IT. Now, this is the topic of the first couple of posts in this series, and the first one that was published just back on July 10th, and there's another one coming up just this Wednesday. So I assume that a pretty important aspect of enabling our users through the IT we provide has a lot to do with the devices they use, the connectivity that they have, how we securely grant them the ability to get their work done. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, the world in which the IT professionals around the world who are responsible for enabling users on devices, it's just fundamentally changed from what it was, you know, 2, 3, 5 years ago. You know, I've worked in the area of desktop management for over 20 years. And it used to be that the design principle was there was one user, that user was working on a Windows device, it was desktops and laptops, you know, but really it was kind of a one-to-one mapping. And we actually the industry called the segment desktop management. Well, now with these consumerization of IT trends, the heterogeneity of the devices that users want to work on has exploded. You know, so it's Windows devices, and it's iOS devices, and it's Android devices. But even more than just the heterogeneity of the devices, the architecture of the devices and the ownership and who is in control of the devices has also dramatically changed. Where the design principle in the past all centered around empowering IT to control devices that the organization had procured and were company assets and put IT in control, and this trend around bring your own device, really IT cannot control the device to the same level and extent that they have in the past for architectural reasons on the device, as well as just, you know, end users aren't going to accept that. But as users are bringing in their own device, IT has to reimagine, has to modify the processes and the policies and the tools that they use to enable users on those devices. And so really, you know, this is no longer a desktop management kind of investment. This is all about being, you know, people-centric and enabling people to be productive on the device of their choice. So quite literally, as we've built this out, we stepped back and we said, hey, let's reimagine what management means in a world where users are bringing in their own devices in. And as we sat back and defined that, we said, listen, we need to be able to enable IT to set policy on access to applications and corporate data based upon first the identity of the user, then the identity and the characteristics of the device, and then finally based upon the network location. And what that allows now is that allows organizations to be able to express policy and say, listen, I'm going to enable users to access assets, you know, corporate assets under certain criteria, and some things I'll allow them to access that on any device, and some things I'm going to require it to be, for example, a domain joint, a corporate controlled on a corporate owned device, and then even to the extent where organizations want to express a policy that says for certain data we only want that access if the user is on the corporate network, and if the user is not on the corporate network, we want to put different access policies in place that govern that. So, you know, our investments have been centered around enabling IT to express policy on the user, then on the device, and then on the network location, and we're able to combine those at the time of access and the time of accessing an application or accessing data to make sure the right policies are put in place and ensures corporate assets are secure and protected.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'm going to actually come back to the discussion specifically on how we empower our users, but let's focus on the IT side of things for just a moment. Okay, so with those criteria in mind, and once IT has this knowledge about the identity of the user, their device, and where they're coming from, it's really up to us as IT to make good use of a tool set that can support the type of work that our users need to do. So what products specifically are we adding functionality to so that we can support our users in this way?
Yeah, so the way to think about this is, you know, we've made some significant changes and enhancements in just core Windows. In Windows Server, in System Center Configuration Manager, and then in Windows Intune. So let me just dive a little bit deeper in some of each of these. You know, some of the work that we've done in just core Windows itself has to do with the simplicity and the ease at which a user can come and register their device, you know, with our management service and with Azure Active Directory. inside of Windows Server, we've done a lot of work to make it easier to get Active Directory Federation services up and running, which is one of the requirements in order for you to use some of the capabilities in Windows Intune, which incidentally, you know, Windows Intune and Office 365 both key off of authenticating against Azure Active Directory. So we can talk some more about that if we want to. Inside of Windows Server, we added a really cool set of capabilities called Work Folders. And Work Folders allows us to be able to have users save data on their devices, have that automatically synchronized back into the file servers running in the organization's data centers, and then back out to the other users' devices, you know, giving them that access to all of their data on all their devices. And then we've done a lot of work in Configuration Manager and Intune. And the way that that everyone should think about this is think about Configuration Manager has now been cloud optimized with Windows Intune. And the way that we think about it here is we think about this as a continuum. We think about it as one, and we think about how we bring these things together so that, you know, the world can use the existing consoles that they're using today with Configuration Manager and managing all the PCs around the world, and extend that to the cloud, and then enable management of all the users' internet-connected devices or cloud-connected devices from the Windows Intune service, which is, you know, a set of services that are running on Windows Azure. And so we've done a lot to enable users to simply access all of their applications and all their data through a self-service portal kind of experience across Windows, across iOS devices, and across Android devices, but have a consistent way for users to access that across their PCs and devices, and provide a way for IT to be able to manage and set policy on access across PCs and devices. And that is one of the key things I want to point out here. Our solution, we are really centered upon how we provide that consistent experience for users and for the IT professionals on your devices and your PCs. You know, we think about that whole continuum.
All right. So let's focus again on the empowerment of our users, empowering users. So for the longest time, we've basically had two extreme choices when dealing with our users and with their devices. Either they're fully joined to the domain and then fully managed by IT, or not. So, you know, we and if they're not, of course, we can't. They're not trusted. Their device can't be trusted with company access or business data. So it seems to me that if someone brings their own device and they still want to get their work done, we should be able to give them some kind of a middle ground. You know, not quite fully domain joined, but at least acknowledged and authenticated as being associated with that particular trusted user. So what are we delivering to support that kind of scenario?
Yeah. So there's work that we've done inside of Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, all the System Center and Intune components, as well as work that we've done in Windows and have extended that out to iOS and Android devices. And think about this as kind of a modern domain join, and we call it workspace join. I'm sorry, workplace join. And what workplace join is it allows a user to bring a device into the organization. They can then register that device with Azure Active Directory. And in registering the device with Azure Active Directory, now the organization is aware of the devices that the user is bringing into work with. We can actually set policy on that, and it's lightweight policy, you know, compared to what we can do today with group policy. But it allows us to set policies on things like, you know, power on password, the network settings, download certificates, all the things that get talked about in the industry around mobile device management or MDM. All those kinds of settings can now be put in place as we do this workspace join, and users are able to register and identify the devices that they want to bring into the organization and work from. And that's key in this strategy that we have of being able to enable IT to set policy based on the user and the device. And so users can now bring their devices in, join it to the workspace, and, you know, think about this again as a modern domain join. And then now IT is aware of the device, is aware of whose device it is, and has that affinity of the user and device that can now express policy. And one of the key things here in all of this is, in this BYOD trend, one of the mental changes that the industry has to make is, ultimately the end user is in control of the device. Mm-hmm. The end user is going to register the device with the user, with the service. Now IT can say, okay, Brad, if you want to bring in your personal device and work and access corporate assets, there are certain things that we're going to require of the device. Like, it has to have a power on password. It has to be encrypted. But the user is in control of either accepting or saying, hey, I don't want to have a power on password. And if they don't want to have a power on password, fine. You know, IT says then you can't access corporate assets from the device. But with what we've built, you know, IT can express the policy. The end user is then in charge of either accepting or not accepting that policy if they want to access the corporate assets from their device. But one of the fundamental, I think, changes that we've had to make as an industry is get to the point where we understand that on these devices that are personal, that the employees have purchased, really the end user is in control of the device, and what IT's opportunity and what IT's responsibility is to express the right set of access policies that govern access from different devices and then track and report on that.
Well, that's fantastic news for our users. So truly, it is the definition of empowerment. I think it's a really great word to use here. So how does IT then manage this? How many different tools does my IT administration need to use in order to manage all these mobile devices?
Yeah, and the beauty of what we've built is you know, our IT professionals can just use what they're already using today, which is System Center Configuration Manager. System Center Configuration Manager is the most widely tool used around the world from organizations of all sizes, small to large, to manage and control their Windows PCs, desktops, laptops, tablets. And what we've done is we have cloud-optimized System Center Configuration Manager and deeply connected it with Windows Intune. And the way to think about Windows Intune is think about the work that we've done in Configuration Manager, in Endpoint Protection, but delivered as a service from Microsoft. Now we've brought these two things together, and one of the reasons why we've done this is, you know, we have a belief that these cloud devices, these smart devices, tablets, smartphones, they were built to consume cloud services, and we believe they should be, you know, the term we use is manage where they live. Mm. And what we mean by that is they are accustomed to and they are built to be able to get applications, policy, and consume cloud services. So let's have them get their policy and have them get their updates from the cloud, but that doesn't mean you have to use the cloud administrative console to control it. We've actually done a great job of connecting Configuration Manager and Intune, and an organization that is using Configuration Manager today, you know, we've done some administrative extension that allows them to be able to express that policy. It then uploads that policy into the Intune service, and the end user devices actually get policy from Intune, but all the administration, all the settings, all the reporting can be done entirely from Configuration Manager.
Fantastic. So when I ask the question, how many tools do we need to use, the answer is one, which is excellent.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a tool that they're used to using.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's shift to the third criteria, and that's how we protect our corporate data. Now, with all these devices that our users might be choosing to use to do their work, how can we be assured that even if they want to take some sensitive documents with them offline and store them on their personal device, how can we be assured that it's going to be safe there?
Yeah, there's a couple things that we're doing here. You know, first and foremost, the most common requirement that every IT organization has when a user wants to bring in a device to work from is requiring a power on password so that, you know, when a user loses their device, there's a level of security on there that you know will protect the device itself, and in the work that we've done, you know, we can report back and when a user, you know, loses their device or it gets stolen, whatever the case may be, as IT can actually get a report that says, hey, you know, we looked at this device yesterday, the power on password was set, encryption was set. So you can actually get reports back that, you know, from a compliance standpoint, you can use to report on the actual state of the device when you know in the last known state. That's one thing. But one of the most interesting things about this is you know, say a user leaves a company or is using a personal device and no longer wants to use that personal device for work and so wants to deregister it, if you will, or from the system. One of the most innovative things that we've done with this set of releases is working across, you know, Windows Server, System Center, Windows Client, and Office. We've been able to identify the different places where corporate identity, corporate assets, corporate data is stored at, and then be able to do what we call a selective wipe so that when a user deregisters or unregisters their device from the system, we can automatically remove the applications and the data that was created by those applications that are really corporate in nature and are not personal data. So let me give you an example. the way our system works is a user is able to go to a self-service experience we call the company portal. That company portal actually authenticates against Active Directory or Azure Active Directory and then is able to bring down a customized view based upon the policies that IT has set for the user and for the device. So I bring up the company portal and I see all the things that I need to get my job done that's personalized to me and my role in the company. I can then provision my applications from that portal and set up everything that I needed to be productive. Well, we track all the things that get provisioned from that portal, and when a user, you know, either unregisters the device from the system or goes up and says, I want to wipe all the corporate assets from this system, we're able to remove all of the applications that were provisioned through the company portal, which, you know, the supposition there is that they're all corporate assets, and the data that was created by those applications we're also able to remove as well. So we can actually do a selective wipe so that, you know, you're not in a situation that when a device is unregistered and you wipe the system, you wipe all the personal data, i.e. all the users' pictures and those types of pieces, which that actually has been one of the most frustrating things that we've heard from users around the world is, hey, if for some reason IT decides to wipe my device, which sometimes occurs accidentally when you put your password in, you know, incorrectly too many times, and the whole device is wiped, including the pictures of my, my 1 or 2 year old child, which the last thing you want to do is lose those pictures. So selective wipe is a big, big part of this as well.
Wow, excellent. And I understand we're also introducing something called work folders. Tell us something about work folders.
Yeah, so work folders, I think, is one of the most exciting things that we've built in this release. And the way to think about this is one of the design goals was enable users to get access to all the applications and data or files that they need to be productive across all their devices. And work files was specifically built to enable users to get access to all their files across all their devices. But I think we took a little bit different approach than others in the industry have, which is we said, listen, organizations around the world have developed all kinds of process, policies, tools that run on their file servers in their data centers. And so our approach was, let's integrate with what IT is already accustomed to using and what they're already accustomed to doing. So what our solution does is when a user saves a file just on their file system on their local device, it automatically gets replicated back into the file servers of the corporation. So now I've got a backup of it, you know, and I've got a disaster recovery type of solution if the device is ever lost or stolen. But then we also take those files and we can then replicate those out to all the other devices that the user has registered with us. So now I in my case, I've got a Surface Pro tablet, I've got a Windows 8.1 laptop, and I've got the desktop that I use in my office. I can save a file on any one of those devices. It gets replicated back to Microsoft's file servers and then replicated back out to all my devices. And so I have all of my files that I'm working on all my devices, and I don't run into that situation where, do I have the right device that has the right files on it that I need to work on? And we're extending that to iOS. It's just not Windows devices. And then as we continue to move forward, we'll also extend that out to Android.
Wow, fantastic. So it sounds like a combination of SkyDrive meets digital rights management and corporate control. It's an excellent solution.
Very good. Let me just make a comment on that, because that's actually an important point. Most organizations want their corporate file stored in not the user's personal SkyDrive account and file replication. So they want something where, you know, you can say, hey, personal files get stored in my SkyDrive, and then the corporate files either get saved in SkyDrive Pro, which is SharePoint on the back end, or in Work Files. And the way that organizations should think about this is certainly where you're working on files where you're going to be collaborating with others, those should go into SkyDrive Pro, which again is SharePoint on the back end. Work folders is for those organizations that want to be able to have a solution based upon the file system to replicate files around. But there are cases where you want to use SkyDrive Pro, and there are cases where you want to use work folders. But one of the great things is with both of these, I can keep my personal files separated from my corporate or work files on the same device.
Fantastic. And then, as you said, being able to reach any device that you own and have registered with the company. Well, this is all really, really great news for IT and for business and for the business users. Before we close, Brad, where can we send our viewers to find out more details about what we discussed today?
Yeah, a couple of places. One of the things is I would encourage people to visit the blog that I write on every week. and that's aka.mswackinthecloud. You can follow me on Twitter, and on Twitter, what you should follow is @inthecloudmsft. And what we're going to be doing is we will be publishing every week a series of pretty deep details going through the new capabilities and the new scenarios of these R2 releases, and those will be archived at aka.mswack, what's new in 2012 R2. It seems like a poem there. It kind of rhymes, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, so I think if you follow the blog, and again, at aka.mswack in the cloud, or else follow on Twitter every time we post, we'll send a tweet out there so people aware that there's a new thing out there. I think you'll get a view of some of the things that I'm working on and some of the thoughts that I have here.
Fantastic. And we'll make sure that those links are also posted near where you saw this video, so you can find these links and follow the conversation. Well, Brad Anderson, thank you again so much for your time today.
Thanks, Kevin.
And we'll see you all again soon for part 2 of TechNet Radio, What's New in Server 2012 R2.